Risen liked to pretend that her pot of shin grass was not stupid, but merely contemplative. She sat near the prow of her catamaran, holding the pot in her lap. The otherwise still surface of the Reshi Sea rippled from the paddling of the guide behind her. The warm, damp air made beads of sweat form on Risen's brow and neck. It was probably going to rain again. Precipitation here on the sea was the worst kind. Not mighty or impressive like a high storm, not even insistent like an ordinary shower. Here, it was just a misting haze. More than a fog, but less than a drizzle. Enough to ruin hair, makeup, clothing, indeed, every element of a careful young woman's efforts to present a suitable face for trading. Risen shifted the pot on her lap. She'd named the grass Tivnuk, sullen. Her Babsk had laughed at the name. He understood. In naming the grass, she acknowledged that she was right, and she had been wrong. His trade with the Shin people last year had been exceptionally profitable. Risen chose not to be sullen at being proven so clearly wrong. She'd let her plant be sullen instead. They'd traversed these waters for 2 days now, and then only after waiting at port for weeks until the right time between high storms for a trip onto the nearly enclosed sea. Today, the waters were shockingly still, almost as serene as those of the Pure Lake. The Stim himself rowed 2 boats over in their irregular flotilla. Paddled by new parchmen, the 16 sleek catamarans were laden with goods that had been purchased with the profits of their last expedition. The Stim was still resting in the back of his boat. He looked like little more than another bundle of cloth, almost indistinguishable from the sacks of goods. He would be fine. People got sick. It happened, but he would become well again.
And the blood I saw on his handkerchief?
She suppressed the thought and pointedly turned around in her seat, shifting Tivnuk to the crook of her left arm. She kept the pot very clean. That soil stuff the grass needed in order to live was even worse than creme, and it had a proclivity for ruining clothing. Gu, the flotilla's guide, rowed in her own boat just behind her. He looked a lot like a Pure Laker with those long limbs, the leathery skin and dark hair. Every Pure Laker she'd met, however, had cared deeply about those gods of theirs. She doubted Gu had ever cared about anything. That included getting them to their destination in a timely manner.
You said we were near.
Oh, we are. Soon now.
Gu spoke Thalen rather well, which was why he'd been hired. It certainly wasn't for his punctuality.
Define soon?
Define?
What do you mean by soon?
Soon. Today, maybe.
Maybe. Delightful.
Gu continued to paddle, only doing so on one side of the boat, yet somehow keeping them from going in circles. At the rear of Risen's boat, Killerm, head of their guards, played with her parasol, opening it and closing it again. He seemed to consider it a wondrous invention, though they'd been popular in Thalena for ages now.
Shows how rarely the Steam's workers get back to civilization. Oh, another cheerful thought. Well, I apprenticed under Vistim, wanting to travel to exotic places. And exotic this is.
True, she'd expected cosmopolitan and exotic to go hand in hand. If she'd had half a wit, which she wasn't sure she did these days, she'd have realized that the really successful traders weren't the ones who went where everyone else wanted to go.
Hard. Patterns are off these days. The gods do not walk where they always should. We shall find her. Yes, we shall.
Risen stifled a sigh and turned forward. With Vistim incapacitated again, she was in charge of leading the flotilla. She wished she knew where she was leading it, or even knew how to find their destination.
That is the trouble with islands that move.
The boats glided past a shoal of branches breaking the sea's surface. Encouraged by the wind, gentle waves lapped against the stiff branches, which reached out of the waters like the fingers of drowning men. The sea was deeper than the Pure Lake, with its bafflingly shallow waters. Those trees would be dozens of feet tall at the very least, with bark of stone. Gu called them Ina, which apparently meant bad. They could slice up a boat's hull. Sometimes they'd pass branches hiding just beneath the glassy surface, almost invisible. She didn't know how Gu knew to steer clear of them. In this, as in so much else, they just had to trust him.
What will we do if he leads us into an ambush out here on these silent waters?
Suddenly, she felt very glad that Vistim had ordered their guards to monitor his fabriel that showed if people were drawing near. Rizin stood up in the catamaran. There was something ahead. A distant, dark line.
Land!
Ah, see? Soon.
Rizin remained standing, waving for her parasol when a sprinkle of rain started to fall. The parasol barely helped, though it was waxed to double as an umbrella. In her excitement, she hardly gave it, or her increasingly frizzy hair, a thought.
Finally!
The island was much bigger than she'd expected. She'd imagined it to be like a very large boat, not this towering rock formation jutting from the waters like a boulder in a field. It was different from other islands she'd seen. There didn't seem to be any beach, and it wasn't flat and low, but mountainous.
Shouldn't the sides and top have eroded over time?
It's so green!
The Taina is a good place to grow. Good place to live. Except when it's at war.
When two islands get too close.
She'd read of this in preparation, though there were not many scholars who cared enough about the Reshi to write of them. Dozens, perhaps hundreds, of these moving islands floated in the sea. The people on them lived simple lives, interpreting the movements of the island as divine will.
No, not always. Sometimes close Taina is good. Sometimes bad.
What determines?
Why, the Taina itself.
The island decides. How can an island...
Then the island ahead of them moved. Not in the drifting way she'd imagined. The island's very shape changed, stones twisting and undulating, a huge section of rock rising in a motion that seemed lethargic until one appreciated the grand scale. Rizin sat down, her eyes wide. The rock, the leg, lifted, streaming water like rainfall. It lurched forward, then crashed back down into the sea with incredible force. The Taina, the gods of the Reshi Isles, were great shells. This was the largest beast she'd ever seen or ever heard of. Big enough to make mythological monsters like the chasm fiends of distant Natnatn seem like pebbles in comparison.
Why didn't anyone tell me?
Is better to see.
Killam smiled.
And take away that moment of discovery? I remember when I first saw one move. It's worth not spoiling. We never tell the new gods when they first come.
Rizin contained her annoyance and looked back at the island.
Curse those inaccurate accounts for my readings. Too much hearsay, not enough experience.
She found it hard to believe that no one had ever recorded the truth.
Perhaps I simply had the wrong sources?
A falling haze of rain shrouded the enormous beast in mist and enigma. What did a thing so big eat? Did it notice the people living upon its back? Did it care?
Elek, what is mating like for these monsters?
It had to be ancient. The boat drew into its shadow, and she could see the greenery growing across its stony skin. Shale bark mounds made vast fields of vibrant colors. Moss coated nearly everything. Vines and rock buds wound around trunks of small trees that had gained a foothold in the cracks between plates of the animal's shell. Gu led the convoy around the hind leg, giving it a very wide berth to her relief, and came up along the creature's flank. Here, the shell dipped down into water, forming a platform. The rain stopped, so Rizin lowered her parasol and shook it over the water. She spotted a group of youths, both male and female, climbing up onto a ridge of shell and leaping from it into the sea. That was not so surprising. The water of the Reshi Sea, like that of the Pure Lake, was remarkably warm. She had once ventured into the water near her homeland. It was a frigid experience, and not one to be engaged in while of sound mind. Frequently, alcohol and bravado were involved in any ocean dip. Out here, though, she expected that swimmers were commonplace. She had not expected them to be unclothed. Risen blushed furiously as a group of people ran past on a dock-like shell outcropping as bare as the day they were born. Young men and women alike, uncaring of who saw. She was no Alethi prude, but...
Alec! Shouldn't they be wearing something?
Shame Spren fell around her, shaped like white and red flower petals that drifted on a wind.
That's another thing we don't warn the newcomers about.
Primitives. I shouldn't blush so. I'm an adult. Well, almost.
The flotilla continued toward a section of shell that formed a kind of dock, a low plate that hung mostly above the water. They settled in to wait, though, for what, she didn't know. After a few moments, the plate lurched, water streaming off it, as the beast took another lethargic step. Once things were settled, Gu guided the boat to the dock.
Up you go.
Shall we tie the boats to anything?
No, not safe with movement. We will pull back.
And at night? How do you dock the boats?
When we sleep, we move boats away, tie together. Sleep out there. Find island again in the morning.
Oh.
Risen checked to make sure her pot of grass was carefully stored in the bottom of the catamaran. She stood up. This was not going to be kind to her shoes, which had been quite expensive. She had a feeling the Reshi wouldn't care. She could probably meet their king barefooted.
Passions! I could probably meet him bare-chested.
She climbed up carefully and was pleased to find that despite being an inch or so underwater, the shell was not slippery. Killam climbed up with her, and she handed him the folded-up parasol, stepping back and waiting as Gu maneuvered his boat away. Another oarsman brought up his boat instead, a longer catamaran with parshmen to help row. Her Bapsk huddled inside, wrapped in his blanket despite the heat, head propped up against the back of the boat. His pale skin had a waxy cast.
Bapsk, we should have turned around.
Nonsense. I've suffered worse. The trade must happen. We've leveraged too much.
I will go to the island's king and traders and ask for them to come here to negotiate with you on the docks.
No. These people aren't like the Shin. My weakness will ruin the deal. Boldness. You must be bold with the Reshi.
Bold? Bapsk, the Reshi are a relaxed people. I do not think much matters to them.
You will be surprised then. Life can be simple here, yes. It attracts such people like war attacks Painspren.
Tracks.
One of the women scampered past, and Risen noticed with shock that she had Thalen eyebrows. Her skin had been tanned in the sun, so the difference in tones hadn't been immediately obvious. Picking through those swimming, Risen saw others.
Those two are probably Herdazians. And an Alethi. Impossible.
People seek out this place. They like the life of the Reshi. Here, they can simply go with the island. Fight when it fights another island. Relax otherwise. There will be people like this in any culture, for every society is made of individuals. You must learn this. Do not let your assumptions about a culture block your ability to perceive the individual, or you will fail.
If you cannot trade with them...
You must do it.
Risen felt cold, despite the heat.
This is what I joined with Vistim to do, isn't it? How many times have I wished he would let me lead? Why should I feel so timid now?
Tell me what to do.
They know much of foreigners. More than we know of them. This is because so many of us come to live among them. Many of the Reshi are as carefree as you say, but there are also many who are not. Those prefer to fight. And a trade, it is like a fight to them.
To me too.
I know these people. We must have passion that Talik is not here. He is their best, and often goes to trade with other islands. Whichever you do meet for trade, he or she will judge you as they would judge a rival in battle. And to them, battle is about posturing. I once had the misfortune to be on an isle during war. As the two islands raged, The people climbed down into boats to exchange insults and boasts. They would each start with their weakest, who would yell out boasts, then progress in a kind of verbal duel up to their greatest. After that, arrows and spears, struggling on ships and in the water. Fortunately, there was more yelling than actual cutting.
Risen swallowed, nodding.
You are not ready for this, child.
I know.
Good. Finally, you realize it. Go now. They will not suffer us long on their island unless we agree to join them permanently.
Which would require?
Well, for one, it requires giving all you own to their king.
Lovely. I wonder how he'd look wearing my shoes. You still haven't told me what we're trading for.
They know. Your conversation will not be a negotiation. The terms were set years ago.
What?
This is not about what you can get, but about whether or not they think you are worthy of it. Convince them. Passions guide you, child. Do well.
If their flotilla was turned away, the cost of this trade was not in the goods, woods, cloth, simple supplies purchased cheaply, but in the outfitting of a convoy. It was in traveling so far, paying guides, wasting time waiting for a break between storms, then more time searching for the right island. If she was turned away, they could still sell what they had, but at a stiff, devastating loss, considering the high overhead of the trip. Two of the guards, Kilurm and Nalent, joined her as she left Vestim and walked along the dock-like protrusion of shell. Now that they were so close, it was difficult to see a creature and not an island. Just ahead of her, the patina of lichen made the shell nearly indistinguishable from rock. Trees clustered here, their roots draping into the water, their branches reaching high and creating a forest. She hesitantly stepped onto the only path leading up from the waters. Here, the ground formed steps that seemed far too square and regular to be natural.
They cut into its shell!
Trolls can't feel their shells. This monster probably can't either.
As they walked, Kilurm kept his hand on his gitet, a type of traditional Thalen sword. The thing had a large triangular wedge of a blade with a grip directly at the base. You'd hold the grip like a fist, and the long blade would extend out down past the knuckles, with parts of the hilt resting around the wrist for support. Right now, he wore it in a sheath at his side, along with a bow on his back.
Why is he so anxious? The Reshi aren't supposed to be dangerous. Perhaps when you are a paid guard, it is better to assume everyone is dangerous.
The pathway wound upward through thick jungle. The trees here were limber and hale, their branches almost constantly moving, and when the beast stepped, everything shook. Vines trembled and twisted on the pathway or drooped from branches, and these pulled out of the way at her approach, but crept back quickly after her passing. Soon she couldn't see the sea or even smell its brine. The jungle enveloped everything. Its thick green and brown were broken occasionally by pink and yellow mounds of shale bark that seemed to have grown for generations. She'd found the humidity oppressive before, but here it was overwhelming. She felt as if she were swimming, and even her thin linen skirt, blouse, and vest seemed as thick as old Thalen Highland winter gear. After an interminable climb to her right, the forest opened up to a view of the ocean beyond. Endless blue waters, clouds dropping a haze of rain in patches that seemed so distinct. And, in the distance...
Another one!
She pointed toward a shadow on the horizon.
Yes, hopefully going the other way. I'd rather not be here when they decide to war.
Though the jungle remained impenetrable to her left, it remained open to her right, where the massive flank of the great shell formed ridges and shelves. She caught sight of some people sitting around tents, leaning back and staring out over the sea. They hardly gave her and the two guards more than a glance. Up farther, she found more Reshi. These were jumping. Men and women alike, and in various states of undress, were taking turns leaping off the shell's outcroppings, plummeting toward the waters far below.
How high up are they?
Risen grew nauseated just watching them.
They do it to shock you. They always jump from greater heights when a foreigner is here.
The comment hadn't come from one of her guards. Risen turned and discovered that to her left, the forest had moved back around a large outcrop of shell, like a rock mound. There, hanging upside down and tied by his feet to a point at the top of the shell, was a lanky man with pale white skin verging on blue. He wore only a loincloth, and his skin was covered with hundreds upon hundreds of small, intricate tattoos. Risen took a step toward him, but Killam grabbed her shoulder and pulled her back.
Amien, keep your distance.
The blue fingernails and deep blue eyes should have been a clue. Risen stepped back, though she couldn't see his Voidbringer shadow.
Keep your distance indeed. Always a wise idea.
He hung there with a pleasant smile on his face, as if completely indifferent to the fact that he was upside down.
Are you well?
Between blackouts, yes. Quite well. I think I'm growing numb to the pain of my ankles, which is just delightful.
Risen brought her hands up to her chest, not daring to get any closer.
Avian.
Very bad luck. She wasn't particularly superstitious. She was even skeptical of the passions sometimes, but, well, this was an Amien.
What fell curses did you bring on this people, beast?
Improper puns and a stench from something I ate that did not sit very well with me. Are you off to speak with the king, then?
Yes.
Well, don't ask about the soul of their god. They don't like to speak of that, it turns out. It must be spectacular to let the beasts grow this large, beyond even the Spren who inhabit the bodies of ordinary great shells.
Do not fear for him, Treadmaster. He could escape if he wished.
Nalent, the other guard, nodded.
They can take off their limbs. They can take off their skin, too. No real body to them, just something evil taking human form.
The squat guard wore a charm on his wrist, a charm of courage, which he took off and held tightly in one hand. The charm hadn't any properties itself, of course. It was a reminder. Courage. Passion. Want what you need, embrace it, desire it, and bring it to you. Well, what she needed was her Babsk, to be here with her. She turned her steps upward again, the confrontation with the Amien leaving her unnerved. More people ran and leaped from the shelves to her right. Crazy.
Trademaster. Killam called me Trademaster.
But she wasn't. Not yet.
I'm property owned by Christine. Well, now I'm just an apprentice who provides occasional slave labor.
She didn't deserve the title, but hearing it strengthened her. She led the way up the steps, which twisted farther around the beast's shell. They passed a place where the ground split, the shell showing skin far beneath. The rift was like a chasm. She couldn't have leaped from one side to the other without falling in. Reshi she passed on the path refused to respond to her questions. Fortunately, Killam knew the way, and when the path split, he pointed to the right fork. At times, the path leveled out for significant distances, but then there were always more steps. Her legs burning, her clothing damp with sweat, they reached the top of this flight and, at long last, found no more steps. Here the jungle fell away completely, though rock buds clutched the shell in the open field, beyond which was only the empty sky.
The head! We've climbed all the way to the beast's head!
Soldiers lined the path, armed with spears bearing colorful tassels. Their breastplates and arm guards were of carapace carved wickedly with points. And though they wore only wraps for clothing, they stood as stiff-backed as any Alethi soldier, with stern expressions to match. So her Babsk was right. Not every Reshi was the lounge-and-swim type.
Boldness.
The king stood at the end of the pathway of guards and rock buds, a diminutive figure on the edge of a carapace shelf, looking toward the sun. Risen strode forward, passing through a double row of spears. She would have expected the same kind of clothing on the king, but instead the man wore full, voluminous robes of vibrant green and yellow.
Kalek, they look terribly hot.
As she drew near, Risen got a sense for just how high she had climbed. The waters below shimmered in the sunlight, so far down that Risen wouldn't have heard a rock hit if she'd dropped one. Far enough that looking over the side made her stomach twist upon itself and her legs tremble. Getting close to the king would require stepping out onto that shelf where he stood. It would place her within a breath of plummeting down hundreds and hundreds of feet.
Steady.
She would show her Babsk that she was capable.
I am not the ignorant girl who misjudged the Shin or offended the Iriali. I have learned. Still, perhaps I should have asked Nalent to lend me his charm of courage.
She stepped out onto the shelf. The king seemed young, at least from behind, built like a youth, or...
No.
The king turned. It was a woman. The woman was old enough that her hair was graying, but not so old that she was bent with age. Someone stepped out onto the shelf behind Risen. Younger, he wore the standard wrap and tassels. His hair was in two braids that fell over tan, bare shoulders.
The king wishes to know why his old trading partner Vistim has not come in person and has instead sent a child in his place.
And you are the king?
You stand beside him and yet ask that of me?
Risen looked toward the robed figure. The robes were tied with the front open enough to show that the king definitely had breasts.
We are led by a king. Gender is irrelevant.
It seemed to Risen that gender was part of the definition, but it wasn't worth arguing over.
My master is indisposed. I am authorized to speak for him and to accomplish the trade.
The newcomer sat down on the edge of the shelf, legs hanging out over the edge. Risen's stomach did a somersault.
He should have known better. The trade is off, then.
You are Talik, I assume.
Yes.
My master warned me about you.
Then he isn't a complete fool, just mostly.
Risen clenched her teeth, then forced herself to sit down beside him on the edge. She tried to do it as nonchalantly as he had, but she just couldn't. Instead, she settled down, not easy in a fashionable skirt, and scooted out beside him.
Ow! Passions! I'm going to fall off of this and die. Don't look down. Do not look down.
She couldn't help it. She glanced downward and felt immediately woozy. She could see the side of the head down there, the massive line of a jaw. Nearby, standing on a ridge above the eye to Risen's right, people pushed large bundles of fruit off the side. Tied with vine rope, the bundle swung down beside the maw below. Mandibles moved slowly, pulling the fruit in, jerking the ropes. The Reshi pulled those back up to affix more fruit, all under the eyes of the king, who was supervising the feeding from the very tip of the nose to Risen's left.
A treat, an offering. These small bundles of fruit, of course, do not sustain our god.
What does?
Why are you still here, young one? Did I not dismiss you?
The trade does not have to be off. My master told me the terms were already set. We have brought everything you require in payment.
Though for what, I don't know.
Turning me aside would be pointless.
The king, she noticed, had stepped closer to listen.
It would serve the same purpose as everything in life, to please Reluna.
That was the name of their god, the Great Shell.
And your island would approve of such waste? Inviting traders all this way, only to send them off empty-handed.
Reluna approves of boldness, and more importantly, respect. If we do not respect the one with whom we trade, then we should not do it.
What ridiculous logic. If a merchant followed that line of reasoning, he'd never be able to trade.
Except... in her months with Vistim, it seemed that he'd often sought out people who liked trading with him, people he respected. Those kinds of people certainly would be less likely to cheat you. Perhaps it wasn't bad logic, simply incomplete.
Think like the other trader.
One of Vistim's lessons, which was so different from the one she'd learned at home.
What do they want? Why do they want it? Why are you the best one to provide it? It must be hard to live out here, in the waters. Your god is impressive, but you cannot make everything you need for yourselves.
Our ancestors did just fine.
Without medicines, they could have saved lives. Without cloth from fibers that grow only on the mainland, your ancestors survived without these things because they had to. You do not.
The trade master hunched forward.
Don't do that, you'll fall!
We are not idiots! I'm so tired of explaining this. We live simply. That does not make us stupid. For years, the outsiders came, trying to exploit us because of our ignorance. We are tired of it, woman. Everything you say is true. Not true, obvious. Yet you say it as if we'd never stop to consider. Oh, medicine. Of course we need medicine. Thank you for pointing that out. I was just going to sit here and die.
I didn't.
Yes, you did mean that. The condescension dripped from your lips, young lady. We're tired of being taken advantage of. We're tired of foreigners who try to trade us trash for riches. We don't have knowledge of the current economic situation on the mainland, so we can't know for certain if we are being cheated or not. Therefore, we trade only with people we know and trust. That is that.
Current economic situation on the mainland?
You've trained in Thelena.
Of course I have. You have to know a predator's tricks before you can catch him. My parents sent me to train as a child. I had one of your Bepsks. I made trade master on my own before returning here.
Your parents being the king and queen?
The king and the king's consort.
You could just call her a queen.
This trade is not happening.
Talik stood.
Go and tell your master we are sorry for his illness and hope that he recovers. If he does, he may return next year during the trading season, and we will meet with him.
You imply you respect him, so just trade with him.
He is sickly. It would not do him justice. We'd be taking advantage of him.
Taking advantage of him? Passions, these people are strange.
It seemed even odder to hear such things coming from the mouth of a man who spoke such perfect Thelen.
You'd trade with me if you respected me. If you thought I was worthy of it.
Ha! That will take years.
Talik joined his mother at the front of the shelf.
Go away and...
He cut off as the king whispered to him softly in Reshi. Talik drew his lips into a line.
What?
Talik turned toward her.
You have apparently impressed the king. You argue fiercely. Though you dismiss us as primitives, you're not as bad as some. The king will hear your argument for a trade.
The woman regarded Rizin with dark eyes and a calm expression.
I've won the first fight, like the warriors on the battlefield. I've dueled and been judged worthy to spar with the one of greater authority.
The king spoke, and Talik interpreted.
The king says that you are talented, but that the trade cannot, of course, continue. You should return with your Bapsk when he comes again. In a decade or so, perhaps we will trade with you.
And is that how Vestim gained respect, Your Majesty? Over years, with his own Bapsk?
Yes.
You didn't interpret that.
I...
Talik interpreted her question. The king smiled with apparent fondness. She spoke a few words in their language, and Talik turned to his mother, looking shocked.
I... Wow.
What?
Your Baps slew a Korakot with some of our hunters? On his own? A foreigner? I have not heard of such a thing.
Vestim? Slaying something? With hunters? Impossible.
The king spoke again, Talik interpreting.
I doubt you'll be slaying any beast, child. Go. Your Baps will recover from this. He is wise.
No. He's dying. This might be his final trade. And I'm ruining it.
My Babsk trusts me. And you said you trust him. Can you not trust his judgment that I am worthy?
One cannot substitute for personal experience.
The beast stepped. Rizin clenched her teeth, imagining them all toppling off. Fortunately, up this high, the motion was more like a gentle sway. Trees rustled and her stomach lurched, but it wasn't any more dangerous than a ship surging on a wave. Rizin stepped closer to where the king stood beside the beast's nose.
You are king. You know the importance of trusting those beneath you. You cannot be everywhere, know everything. At times, you must accept the judgment of those you know. My Babsk is such a man.
Talik translated, a surprised look on his face.
She said you make a valid point, but what you do not realize is that she has already paid your Babsk this respect. That is why she agreed to speak with you herself. She would not have done this for another.
But I...
The king's voice grew harder. Again, Talik translated.
Return below. Tell your Babsk that you proceeded far enough to speak with her personally. Doubtless this is more than he expected. You may leave the island and return when he is well. Give him my best wishes for his recovery.
The king turned away. Talik smiled in what seemed to be satisfaction. Rizin glanced at her two guards, who bore grim expressions. She felt numb.
Turned away like a child demanding sweets.
She felt a furious blush consume her as she walked past the men and women preparing more bundles of fruit. Risen stopped. She looked to her left, out at the endless expanse of blue. She turned back toward the king.
I believe that I need to speak with someone with more authority.
You have spoken to the king. There is nobody with more authority.
I beg your pardon, but I do think there is.
This is stupid. This is stupid. This is... No, don't think.
Risen scrambled to the rope used to send the fruit down.
Trade master!
She grabbed the length of rope and let herself over the side, climbing down beside the great shell's head. The god's head.
Passions, this is hot in a skirt!
The rope bit into the skin of her arms, and it vibrated as the creature below crunched on the fruit upon its end. Talik's head appeared above.
What in Kellet's name are you doing, idiot woman?
Risen clung to the rope, heart rushing in a mad panic.
What am I doing?
Ranuna approves of boldness!
There is a difference between boldness and stupidity.
Risen continued to climb down. It was more of a slide.
Oh, craving passion of need!
Pull her back up! You soldiers, help!
Risen looked up as the workers grabbed the rope to haul her back upward. A new face appeared above, however, looking down. The king. She raised a hand, halting them as she studied Risen. Risen continued on down. She didn't go terribly far, maybe 50 feet or so. Not even down to the creature's eye. She stopped herself with effort, her fingers burning.
Oh, great Ranuna! Your people refuse to trade with me, and so I come to you to beg! Your people need what I have brought, but I need the trade even more! I cannot afford to return!
The creature, of course, did not reply. Risen hung in place beside its shell, which was crusted with lichen and small rock buds.
Please! Please!
What am I expecting to happen?
She didn't expect the thing to make any sort of reply, but maybe she could persuade those above that she was bold enough to be worthy.
It can't hurt, at least.
The rope quivered in her hands, and she made the mistake of glancing down.
Actually, this could hurt very much.
The king has commanded that you return.
Will our negotiation continue?
Risen glanced up. The king actually looked concerned.
That's not important. You have been issued a command.
Risen gritted her teeth, clinging to the rope, looking at the plates of chitin before her.
And what do you think, Ranuna?
Down below, the thing bit down, and the rope suddenly became very tight, slapping Risen against the side of the enormous head. The rope pulled even tighter.
Oh, no.
Then snapped. She did not fall gracefully, but as a flurry of cloth and legs, her skirt flapping, her stomach lurching.
What have I done?
She saw an eye, the god's eye, only a glimpse as she passed. It was as large as a house, glassy and black, and it reflected her falling form. She seemed to hang before it for a fraction of a second. Then, a crash into water, hard as stone. Blackness. Risen found herself floating when she awoke. She didn't open her eyes, but she could sense that she was floating, drifting, bobbing up and down.
She is an idiot.
Then she fits well with me. I have to say, old friend, you were supposed to help train her, not drop her off a cliff.
Floating, drifting. Wait.
Risen forced her eyes open. She was in a bed inside a hut. It was hot. Her vision swam, and she drifted. Drifted because her mind was cloudy.
What did they give me?
Oh.
She tried to sit up. Her legs wouldn't move. Her legs wouldn't move. The stem's face appeared above her, followed by a concerned Reshi woman with ribbons in her hair.
That's not the queen. King, whatever.
Calm now. Calm. They'll get you something to drink, child.
I lived.
Barely. The spren cushioned your fall. from that height. Child, what were you thinking, climbing over the side like that?
I needed to do something to prove courage. I thought I needed to be bold.
Oh, child, this is my fault.
You were his, Babsk. Dalik, their trader. You set this up with him so I could have a chance to trade on my own, but in a controlled setting. The trade was never in danger, and you are not as sick as you appear.
When did you figure that out?
Right now?
Well, you must know that I feel a true fool. I thought this would be a perfect chance for you. A practice with real stakes. And then you went and fell off the island's head.
Rizin squeezed her eyes shut as the Rishi woman arrived with a cup of something.
Will I walk again?
Here, drink this.
Will I walk again?
I don't know, but you will trade again. Passions. Daring to go above the king's authority. Being saved by the island's soul itself. The other islands will be clamoring to trade with us.
Then I accomplished something.
Oh, you accomplished something indeed.
She felt a prickling pressure on her arm and opened her eyes with a snap. Something crawled there, about as big as the palm of her hand. A creature that looked like a kremling, but with wings that folded along the back.
What is it?
Why we came here. The thing we trade for. A treasure that very few know still exists. They were supposed to have died with Emia, you see. I came here with all of these goods in tow because Talik sent me to say they had the corpse of one to trade. Kings pay fortunes for them. I have never seen one alive before. I was given the corpse I wanted in trade. This one has been given to you.
By the Reshi?
The Reshi could not command one of the Larkin. This was given to you by the island itself. Now drink your medicine and sleep. You shattered both of your legs. We will be staying on this island for a long while as you recover. And as I seek forgiveness for being a foolish man.
She accepted the drink. As she drank, the small creature flew up toward the rafters of the hut and perched there, looking down at her with eyes of solid silver.